characteristics of this case, understanding what a six-month suspension means to Mr. Moody, and as a result, impose a suspension of a shorter duration than Mr. Moody.
Page 5 of your reply brief, you said the flaw in the referee's report is he did not conclude that discipline in this case should be consistent with that imposed in Casey. Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. In Casey, I think we were clear that that represented the end of the line for discipline that is more lenient with respect to firms' funds than for clients' funds, right?
Yes.
Okay. So if Casey was the end of the line for that leniency, why should we have reference to Casey for the discipline that should be imposed in this case?
I don't think we're relying upon Casey. I think we're relying upon Shea. But as I view Casey, what Casey said is that the end of the line for viewing dishonesty with non-client funds in a significantly different way than we view dishonesty with client funds. I would, to some extent, respectfully disagree with the court. I think dishonesty with client funds should be seen as a more serious matter.
Okay. But that's not our rule.
Correct. But Casey did not say that every case of dishonesty must have at least a six-month suspension or a year suspension or anything like that.
It didn't have a bright-line rule. However, have we ever imposed a discipline of less than 6 months for dishonesty with a client's funds?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
And I'm not aware of a case since Casey in which you have imposed less than 6 months for dishonesty for non-client fund situations. The difference here, I think, is this. If all we look at is that, then I agree. A six-month suspension is appropriate. But I don't think that's where the analysis should end. The analysis also should address Mr. Moody personally. And what the referee highlighted in his factual findings, which are not only to be accepted by this court if they have any evidence, but amply supported by the evidence, what the referee found is that Mr. Moody's conduct was completely out of character with a 30-plus year history of performance as a lawyer, that it was inexplicable, that it simply didn't make any sense.
And is it your position, that the inexplicability should weigh in favor of a lighter discipline?
I think the inexplicability, let me be clear, we, be perfectly candid, we examined the possibility that there might be a medical defense here because of Mr. Moody's very serious health problems, which overlapped to some extent with the time frame. And there's not a doctor who will say there's a direct connection. We couldn't satisfy the burden of proof. But speaking from a common sense perspective, it's the only explanation for why someone who behaved without blemish, behaved exemplarily for 30 years, suddenly for one relatively short period of time, I agree, it's not a month or two, but it's a relatively short period of time in the overall scheme of things, behaved in a way which is totally uncharacteristic of his conduct for the rest of his life, totally uncharacteristic of his statements today, which the referee found convincing, I would suggest moving beyond convincing, and suggest that to the extent that one of the things this court should be concerned about, and that is the man involved and what risk he poses and what chance there is to rehabilitate and save a lawyer's professional life, if not his life. If you take those things into account, then saying to Mr. Moody, who has serious health problems, younger than me but not a young man, who very much wants to restore his name and his reputation if he has any chance, to say, if we give you a five-month suspension or a four-month suspension, we have every reason to believe that you will be back practicing law in 4 or 5 months, and that we will never see anything like this again, and that you will be a credit to your profession. If, on the other hand, depending on what happens on July 1, depending on what position OLR takes, if there's a motion for reinstatement, a six-month suspension under the existing current rules probably works out to be a 25-month suspension, which means the difference between 5-month suspension and a 6-month suspension is not a month, it's a 5-to-1 ratio. And I know the court has rules which are under consideration which would change that and potentially mean that Mr. Moody would get reinstated perhaps in 3 to 6 months after he applied for reinstatement, sometime in late summer or early fall, depending on when you make a decision. But that's still twice as long as the referee felt was an appropriate time for him to be suspended. So the facts of this case indicate that Mr. Moody inexplicably, in a series of transactions over a confined period of time, converted approximately $8,850 of funds, most of which were his. And that's, again, one of the inexplicable, tragic, ridiculous, stupid things about this, is that there really is no gain here. There's no gain. There's no motive. He didn't need the money. The referee and OLR have suggested that there was some element of resentment at his partners, and there is testimony in the record that says that he did feel some element of resentment, but there's no testimony that that's why he did it. And so what we're suggesting is that under all of the circumstances of this case, first of all, there's never going to be another case like this. I mean, none of these cases ever match up. If you look at any of the ones cited here, they're all different. The amounts are different. The conduct's different. The circumstances are different.
We do try to draw a line that is as straight as possible between the different cases, so we make sure that we're treating like circumstances in a similar fashion, right?
I agree, and you should.
So how would you distinguish Schaller? So we described misconduct there like this. We said the misconduct consists of conversion of funds while employed at his former law firm. Attorney Schaller also failed to report the conversion of funds as income on tax returns and engaged in the practice of law while his license was suspended for failure to pay bar dues. How would you, and we imposed 2 years suspension in that case. So how would you distinguish that case from this one?
First of all, I was involved in the Schaller case. 2 years sounded like a long period of time to me. The one significant, I'd say the two different characteristics are, number one, the practicing law without a license, which underlines the contempt for the rules, underlines someone who is not someone that can be trusted, much more so than in this case. And second of all, there aren't findings of the type, as far as I can tell in the Schaller record, of the type that the referee made in this case, findings which, by your own rules, you're required to accept about Mr. Moody's good character, about Mr. Moody's genuine remorse, about his regret, about all of the things that suggest that he is never going to do anything like this again. There are ways in which one can distinguish it on that alone.
So,
but I agree, Schaller is otherwise a close case, except for those two characteristics.
Yeah. So what I'm trying to figure out is if there's a way we can segment out pieces of that 2 years so that we can draw some parallels here. So would it be your suggestion that we imposed 18 months of that 2 year suspension based on the practice of law on a suspended license?
I don't know. If you're asking for my personal reaction, I thought 2 years was a fairly long suspension for the evidence in that case. But there obviously are things that in these cases that you don't see in the decisions that are part of the record, and I haven't researched the record in detail. But the differing characteristics between Schallert and this case are the two I mentioned. And I think it's noteworthy that OLR never sought a 2 year suspension, so they obviously see this as a different case.
But what I'm trying to figure out, maybe 2 years was high, maybe it wasn't. What I'm trying to figure out is a sense of proportionality, right? So if we're saying that 6 months, if we were to say, okay, we'll go along with 6 months being attributable to the conversion of funds, we'd have to conclude that the practice of law on a suspended license, we considered that to be three times as egregious as the misappropriation of funds. Is that sense of proportionality, is that right? Is that a logical thing to conclude?
I don't think that alone would explain it, which is why I think the explanation is, without knowing Mr. Schaller, without knowing what the record showed, I think the difference has to be that the referee evaluated Mr. Schaller, and therefore this court evaluated Mr. Schaller in a very different way than I believe Mr. Moody is entitled to be evaluated in light of the findings that the referee made. He's the one who listened to Mr. Moody, he's the one who evaluated him, and he's the one who said, this is just impossible to understand. And impossible to understand says to me, out of character, number one, but more importantly, unlikely, essentially inconceivable to be done again in the future. I would suspect the court didn't have that feeling about Mr. Schaller. I don't know that, but that would be the conclusion I would draw.
Yeah. Is there any post-Casey discipline that would support something less than 6 months in a situation like this?
Not that I'm aware of. And I'm pretty sure, given the fact that we researched this, I would be aware of it. So what I believe are the important factors in this case are the ones that I just talked about with Justice Kelly. What makes this case different is Mr. Moody's individual involvement in the case and the assessment the referee made. If this court follows its own rules, as I know it does, and accepts his findings say Mr. Moody is a different man than the people that you addressed in the other cases. And if he's a different man, he deserves, or may deserve, I would suggest, to be treated differently. And the differently is, for example, even Mr. Schaller, with the reinstatement rules as they stand stood at the time, he would be reinstated in 3.5 years. The difference between the two becomes much smaller in proportion because of the reinstatement rules. Now, the new rules may change that. It may be that if the new rules are adopted in July 1 and Mr. Moody applies for reinstatement after that date and OLR agrees he should be handled what I would call administratively rather than going through the full hearing process, that will be a shorter period of time. But we don't know any of those things.
Counsel, there was another recommendation in the referee's report that Attorney Moody not be permitted to practice with a firm for a period of time, which I thought was really quite unusual. Usually we have a lawyer that's gotten into difficulty to be supervised and be with other reputable attorneys. Do you want to speak to that a little bit?
I found it rather surprising myself. I've noticed the same thing, that frequently you want people who have had problems to have people looking over their shoulders and supervising them. The only thing I can think of is that he thought about the gravamen of the charge, which is not handling funds that belong to a law firm properly, and that if he was practicing alone, that problem wouldn't exist because the funds would all be his. The fact of the matter is the record demonstrates that Mr. Moody's intention is to practice, if he's permitted, at whatever time he's permitted, to practice on a part-time basis, that he's been required to leave his former law firm. When the public charge was filed, he had an of-counsel-in-effect relationship with another law firm in Wauwatosa. Yeah. That ended as a result of that.
I know that Attorney Shea went from his law firm, where he kept money directly from a client rather than turning it over, to another law firm in Dane County.
Yes.
Down the road. So I was a little bit surprised about where that had come from, but you don't any comment on it, really?
I don't have any comment. I don't think OLR asked for it. As I recall, it was the referee's idea.
Okay.
My point, I guess, is I'm not sure what the genesis of that is. It's certainly nothing that we oppose in any way, but on the other hand, it's not particularly relevant to Mr. Moody's plans, which are to work, help people, not really so much for the money, but for two reasons, I think. First of all, I think he thinks he owes a debt, and he wants to try to fulfill it. And second of all, I think he wants to try in the way he can, given his health limitations and his age limitations, to try to rehabilitate his name. So it's not really a question of trying to make money. It's a question of trying to get this passed in the past.
Thank you.
The only other comment I wanted to add concerns some of the cases that OLR relies upon. And although Justice Kelly certainly pointed out the Schaller case as being a case which is difficult, not impossible, but difficult to reconcile with what we're suggesting here, it's also difficult to reconcile with what OLR asked for in the first place and what the referee recommended. And I think all that tells us is that even if we can't articulate what was different about Schaller, there is something about this case that everybody recognizes is not a Schaller case. The only real dispute here at this point is, originally it was, should it be a year or something less than 6 months? Now is, should it be 6 months or something less than 6 months? So there isn't, for those who have dealt with Mr. Moody, who have seen him testify, who have evaluated his conduct, I'm of course the least credible since I'm his advocate, but OLR's position and the referee's position both, I think, emphasize strongly there are things that are different about this case that don't warrant that. And I think those are important considerations. Insofar as the other cases are concerned, even though all of them involve suspensions of longer periods of time, they all involve conduct which is more egregious in one or more respects. Larger amounts of money, longer periods of time, falsifications of a different character than were involved here, prior disciplinary records, things of that type. But there really isn't any case other than potentially Schaller that is comparable here, and Casey, bearing in mind what the court said about Casey after Casey was decided.
How do you distinguish Schaller?
I distinguish Schaller, I think, on one ground that's clear in the record and the other one which I can only surmise.
Okay.
And the one that's clear in the record is that he did have this problem of practicing his law without a license. And I know this court has repeatedly said that conduct of not following the rules in ways like that, like dishonesty, puts things in a different category. And I suspect that's a big part of it. The only other one I can tell you is that it must be that Mr. Schaller was not as repentant, acknowledging, and responsive as the referee concluded that Mr. Moody was. That there's not a finding in that regard, but it's the only other thing I can see that would explain the difference between that conduct and the 2-year suspension and what even OLR asked here, which was only a 1-year suspension.
Thank you.
If you don't have any other questions, that's all I had to say today. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Good morning, Chief Justice, Justices, Counsel. May it please the Court. My name is Tom Leitch. I'm an Assistant Litigation Counsel with the Office of Lawyer Regulation, and it is my privilege to appear before you today. As the Court is well aware, in this particular case, OLR alleged that Attorney Moody violated two different Supreme Court rules. One is Rule 8.4C, for engaging in dishonest, deceitful, misrepresentative type of behavior. The other is a standard of conduct that was, Justice mentioned, the Shea case, derived from the Shea case, which is enforceable pursuant to 20:8.4F. So those are the two violations that speaking of. The violations after the complaint was filed, the stipulation was entered. The admissions were made as to the violations, which is to the applause of Attorney Moody. However, these violations constitute serious, extensive, and the nature of the conduct being deceitful and dishonest are all exactly opposite of what we expect from counsel, especially in this case as it pertains to treatment of his long-standing partners in the firm with whom his position as a shareholder was based on trust and honesty. And he violated that repetitively and over an extended period of time. These conversions occurred over about an 18-month period of time. The first one in...
Counsel, before you get into the recitation of the incidents, is it OLR's position that a 6-month suspension is a necessary floor for circumstances in which there has been a misappropriation of either firm or client funds?
Could you repeat it? I'm not sure that I heard the first part of the question.
Sure. Is it OLR's position that there is necessarily a 6-month floor for discipline in circumstances where there is misappropriation of client or firm funds?
Well, I don't know that I could say that across the board, Justice. There certainly might be instances where there was conversion of client funds or firm funds. A one-time conversion of $250, is that going to result in the necessity of a 6-month suspension? I can't say that that would necessarily be the case. In this particular case, the facts of the conversions and the length of period of time that they occurred would be far different than the example that I gave you. So I don't think that OLR is saying there needs to be a floor in every case where there has been conversion of client funds or firm funds, that it has to be a 6-month period. In this particular case, I think it's necessary because it puts the onus on Attorney Moody to show that he has the character and fitness to resume the practice and the trust of the court, the public, and the legal system as a whole.
Right. The deceitfulness that goes into misappropriation of funds, that's always present in every misappropriation case, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Should the amount of the funds misappropriated play a role?
Yes, it should. The way that I read the precedent from Casey on is the amount seems to fit in to a certain degree. As we look at the amounts in certain of these cases, the suspensions tend to be longer. I think there's a couple of things that go along with that. To convert those higher amounts of money, the conversions take place over a longer period of time, presumably. And secondly, it's more repetitive type of harm to the firm or to the client, whoever the misappropriation comes from. But I don't think, in reading the precedent, I think that the court puts as much weight, or possibly more weight, in the nature of the misconduct, that being deceitful and dishonest and covert, as it does the amounts. So I don't think the amounts should be the sole determination of the length, just like maybe the number of conversions shouldn't be determinative. In this particular case, there were at least five clients that were whose made payments whose money should have gone to the firm that Moody kept. There were at least eight instances, because some of these clients had more than one matter with Attorney Moody, and he converted funds from several different matters from one client. So there's a wide breadth of conversion that took place, and it involved a lot of different clients. Not directly, because as we know, none of those clients were made to repay the funds that Moody converted. It didn't negatively affect the clients. It negatively affected the firm as a whole. So the seriousness, the nature, and the extent of these, I think, is the important thing. The Olson case, I think, we relied on very heavily. OLR relied on very heavily, because I think the facts of that are very analogous to the present. Olson had no prior discipline. He got a one-year suspension, which is what OLR was seeking in this particular case. Some of the mitigating factors in the Olson case were that generally cooperative. He had extremely positive character references, who said crime was out of character. We had the same type of testimony from some character witnesses in this particular case. And talking about the proportionality of the sanction with the offenses that were committed, I think that Referee Moore had a well-reasoned, principled application of the prior precedent from this court, indicating that at least a six-month period of suspension was warranted under the circumstances. That was one of the cases that we relied on. Another case that this court recently decided was the disciplinary proceedings against Bant. And this court upheld a six-month suspension of Attorney Bant's licenses, not for converting funds analogous to Moody. If you recall, Attorney Bant had fabricated some receipts, submitted them for reimbursement to her firm for expenses that she never incurred. But that was an 8.4C case. It was an 8.4F case. A six-month suspension was found to be appropriate. So I think that case wasn't cited in Referee Moore's report, but I think it's applicable in this case, because OLR still contends that the suspension in this case should be at least 6 months, but no more than a year.
Counsel, what do you think about the criteria that I asked opposing counsel about, that the referee recommended that he not be permitted to practice with the firm for 3 years, but to practice as a sole proprietor? That seemed very unusual to me. What is OLR's position on that?
Well, it took, I think, OLR by surprise as well, Chief Justice. I haven't, in my research and preparation of the case and in trying the case, didn't find any precedent that sort of supported that. And as you noted, Chief Justice, the trend or the theory tends to be the opposite,
right,
that we
right.
want a mentor, that we want somebody to watch over the individual who is being disciplined.
So OLR takes no position on it, or they don't want it to occur, or they like it? What's OLR's position?
I don't think OLR really takes any position on that particular. It probably is true, although it's speculative to say where Attorney Moody will wind up, because as you pointed out, Chief Justice, in Shea, the attorney went down the road and started practicing at another firm, putting himself in a position to potentially commit the same misconduct down the line. Will that happen here? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think reasons one attorney goes to another firm, if you've been in practice for a long time, you have a book of business that you take with you. And that's why you're able to get a job with another firm. And I don't know what the arrangements were made with the other firm. So certainly, and that's not in anything that we've seen on Shea, but he does want to continue to practice, and if he's ill and has poor health, which is what most of what we've read shows, it would seem he'd be better off where there was someone to kind of look over his shoulder a little bit for a variety of reasons.
Well, I don't disagree, Chief Justice. And the fact of the matter is that there were one of the very baffling cases or baffling things about this particular case, and Referee Moore pointed it out, was there really isn't any explanation for why he did what he did.
Right.
And in an OLR's mind, that makes one, the betrayal of his partners, all the more difficult to understand. It begs the question of, if we don't know what the problem is, how do we address it? There isn't a remedy here. There were some theories that came forward at the hearing about his health, depression, anxiety, impulse control, too much gambling. Those were not found to be reasons for this. And, of course, there's precedent that stands for the proposition that absent that causal connection, the court shouldn't really consider those as mitigating factors, or it shouldn't reduce the level of discipline that's appropriate. We have a 25-year span from Casey to present where conduct of this nature there hasn't been a case where there has been less than a six-month suspension. And Justice Kelly mentioned it. I don't know that that's necessarily a bright line rule. There may be a case that comes before the court where less than that is appropriate. This isn't it, at least in OLR's opinion, and the recommendation of Referee Moore reflected that. These cases have to stand for and present a very high level of deterrence for other attorneys, and a brief suspension of 60 days or even 5 months require the attorney to demonstrate his character and fitness, I think will set a dangerous precedent.
So, counsel, is the OLR's position that there should be a six-month minimum in suspension in this case? Is that then primarily driven by the desire to see him go through the reinstatement process?
Yes. Yes, it is. Because, and again, I think I was talking about it at the time, the lack of an identifiable reason for these conversions, I think, and OLR takes the position that that's particularly troublesome. It wasn't done because of need. We know that from the testimony of Mr. Moody. He was the highest wage earner in his firm at the time. His wife was gainfully employed. He didn't need the money. It didn't happen for some medical type of reason. This resentment theory, Moody himself testified that he couldn't truthfully say whether or not that was the reason that he converted the funds. And so those things make this case unique, and it makes it troublesome from imposition of a sanction standpoint. This isn't a one-off kind of a theft. Attorney Moody was benefited from the fact that his partners didn't refer this case to law enforcement for prosecution. In the Olson case, Olson was convicted of felony theft, I believe, and spent some time in jail as a result of that. So I have this inability to connect the dots to this. You have a case in Olson where a man was criminally convicted, spent time in jail, got a one-year suspension for converting funds that pretty much approximate what Attorney Moody did. And counsel is asking for a suspension of far less than that for behavior that's far similar. Moody really dodged a couple of bullets here. One is the felony conviction. The other is the fact that it was admitted that Attorney Moody didn't report the funds on his tax returns. OLR's chose not to pursue that particular count, but the deceitful or dishonest nature of that conduct mirrors that the same deceitful and dishonest misconduct that he engaged in converting the funds in the first place. As the court is aware, OLR relied on the Schaller case. The Shea case, there's a Peterson case, also no prior history, stipulated misconduct, but not to discipline. So that the sanction in that particular case was litigated. This was an associate and attorney, not a partner. And that's I think that OLR distinguishes Casey in that regard, too, because we have Casey was an associate attorney who had been practicing for just about a year when his conversions took place. They took place over a span of about 6 months, so a relatively short period of time. He wasn't a shareholder in the firm. Moody is exactly the opposite of Casey. Moody, at the time of his first conversion, had been practicing for over 30 years. He was a well-respected, trusted member of his law firm. And he, for some reason, just saw fit to convert funds that belonged to the firm. There is some mention, I think, in counsel's brief about the fact that there was no harm to the firm. And I would have to strongly disagree with that conclusion. I can't imagine how the members of that law firm felt when their trusted partner took ill and they had to take over management of his files. And in doing so, you discover that first instance of conversion and say, wow, is this a mistake? Was this inadvertent? Is this a typographical error or something like that? And then as you dig deeper, you find one after another of conversions that span this length of time. The harm to the firm had to be both emotional and financial. We know that the firm did not seek restitution. I mean, that was part of the stipulation. That was part of the agreement leading up into the stipulation. The firm didn't seek restitution of those funds, but that doesn't mean that those funds were repaid. Some of the other cases, I think, in counsel's brief, he distinguishes one from the amount of money that's taken, but also the fact that there was restitution ordered in these cases. It's another bullet that Moody dodged, is that his firm didn't come back to him and say, well, we want you to repay this money. They treated him better after the conversions were discovered of course, than Moody treated them for at least the 18 months preceding his illness that took him away from the firm. There was the Brown case that this court decided not too long ago. That was a stipulated 18-month suspension for conversion of funds over a period of time.
I'm just thinking back on something you just said, and it, to me, is in direct conflict with what Mr. Johnson said. So restitution would be due to the firm for amounts that they are out. But counsel indicated that most of those funds were Mr. Moody's. So is that correct or incorrect in your view?
Under the firm's established rule, each lawyer was entitled to a percentage, I believe, of what they brought in. So while it is true that Moody, in essence, stole money that he would have gone to him anyway, Justice, I don't put a whole lot of weight on that factor, because the mens rea of the intent to steal
restitution. That may very well be why they didn't seek restitution, because it wasn't theirs to seek.
It's quite a possibility that they felt it wasn't necessary to go after that much money. That could be. I don't know what the, you know, if that
was the
answer.
I just wondered how much import, I mean, if that is a disputed fact, we need to know the answer to it. If somehow not credit him or credit him or not credit the firm, restitution is kind of a big issue. So we
right.
want people to pay it when they owe it.
Right. And restitution isn't an issue in the matters. The firm elected not to participate really after the grievance was filed. Counsel makes some mention of that in his brief. And again, I think it's one of those things that really diverts attention away from the matter at hand. In the ABA standards, there isn't any rule or there isn't any discussion about motivation, what motivates a firm to file the grievance. They felt that they were compelled under the Supreme Court rules to do that. Once they did that, they stepped back and they just let OLR take the case. They let the case go the way that it did. So the motivation for the firm not wanting to participate further, I don't really think is an issue that the court need consider.
I just mention it because I thought you were saying in the context of how he's already received so many benefits. He wasn't charged with a felony. He didn't have implications with respect to taxes. And in addition to that, he received the benefit of not paying restitution. So I wanted to know to what extent you wished us to consider that.
There was also mention in counsel's brief about the factor that the court considers about the need to impress upon the attorney the seriousness of the misconduct. OLR doesn't dispute the fact that Attorney Moody is remorseful and at this point in time understands the seriousness of his misconduct. But the question that I was asking myself while I was preparing is, did he understand the seriousness of his misconduct when it was occurring? Because if he did, and he continued to engage in this activity, that's a huge red flag with respect to Attorney Moody's character. And if he didn't understand the seriousness of his misconduct while it was occurring, that's a big red flag. And those are the reasons, or those are part of the many reasons that OLR seeks at least a six-month suspension of his license. Getting back to kind of the medical or the health issue, the depression that was talked about, the anxiety, the gambling problem, they're all self-diagnosed and they're untreated. 3 years on from the last conversion, attorney, and with that length of time to be able to try to gain some insight as to what he did, we still don't have an answer to that question. And that's, I think, particularly problematic in this case. Does he understand the seriousness of his misconduct now? I would have to assume so. He lost his job at a law firm where he had been practicing for over 30 years. He was a partner. It has cost him financially. It has cost him not only from the money that he's probably not making that he otherwise would have, but to defend himself in these proceedings. It has cost him emotionally. The fact that you understand the seriousness of the misconduct after the fact shouldn't surprise us. It doesn't negate or mitigate the need for there to be a meaningful level of sanction. I guess I would compare it in certain contexts to criminal case where somebody's charged with a crime. I now understand the seriousness of this because I'm facing all of these penalties, including jail. The court is going to impose a penalty, a sanction sufficient enough to make sure that the seriousness is gathered, whether that's sitting in jail for 10 days for a petty theft or something. We're gonna make sure you understand. That's kind of what the 6-month suspension is in a certain way. Is to help Moody appreciate that. If the justices don't have any further questions, I don't have a whole lot more to add.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to just respond briefly to a few of the points that were raised by counsel. First of all, I think we need to emphasize how much we agree on, much more than how much we disagree on. I mean, the referee, OLR, and Mr. Moody only disagree on 1 month. No one's disagreeing on anything else. At this point, everyone agrees that it should be either a month suspension or a 6-month suspension. I think that's a tribute to the fact that, despite what counsel just said, there's also broad agreement on the fact that this is a different case. There have been some suggestions here that perhaps a 5-month suspension is, no one used that word, but I think the concept is a slap on the wrist. I think we need to put this in context. Mr. Moody did engage in serious misconduct. A 5-month suspension is serious discipline. His name has been irrevocably trashed as a result of this, deservedly so, but it has been. He lost his association with the law firm that he was with for many, many years. He has lost an association with another law firm that he attempted to develop afterwards.
Counsel, does your client have any, has he articulated, I guess, anything in these proceedings that would say why? I mean, I understand OLR's frustration. If he can't say why he did it before, what should we conclude makes us believe he won't do it again at another time?
I don't mean to be flip, but I guess it's because he's not an idiot. He's gone through some very bad things that are totally out of character. It's very hard to believe he would do it again.
Sure.
While OLR suggests that his inability to explain his conduct is somehow suspicious, I would suggest it's otherwise. Mr. Moody's a smart man, obviously. If I'm sure he's smart enough to realize that if he could have come up with an excuse or an explanation for his conduct, it would have been a good idea.
Did he admit what he'd done when he was challenged by his partners?
Yes.
Okay.
And
that this was a typo or something. He admitted what he did.
He didn't contest it. He testified in the hearing, it's in the record, that he has a very poor memory of the events of this. But he didn't contest it because he said it's obvious. It's true. But I think it's clear from the record, if you asked him to recount today what happened without the aid of documents, he would probably be unable to do that.
Thank you.
I don't think, perhaps, it's not entirely accurate to say that the OLR found his inability to explain his conduct suspicious as much as it is that they are concerned about the potential recurrence and the belief that going through the reinstatement process would help come to terms with that and give the court the confidence that this would not recur.
So what will happen in the reinstatement process? Mr. Moody's memory is not going to improve. He's going to say the same things. And understand, the fact that they said that means that even if the new rules go into effect as they're contemplated, and even if they go into effect in time for them to apply to Mr. Moody's reinstatement, it means if they object and refuse to stipulate to the expedited process, he's going to go through the year and a half of additional hearings before he will get reinstated by this court. That's an estimate, not a fact. But that they've in effect announced here that a six-month suspension is going to be an 18-month to two-year suspension.
Right. But if he does go through the reinstatement process, that process will be in part a fact-finding inquiry into whether he's fit to practice law in the state of Wisconsin. And that's going to inquire into his character, right?
It certainly will. I haven't gone through a number of those. We don't develop a magical ability to see into someone's mind any better before another referee another time. We'll be faced with much the same problem, I'm sure. I would like to correct one thing that counsel said. I think the record is clear that Mr. Moody did repay the firm. He didn't just walk away. The firm and he negotiated a release. He sold his interest. This was all resolved as part of that. And again, I'm not saying there aren't multiple explanations for why a law firm might decide they don't want to have criminal charges presented. But we have here now another person who apparently does not see Mr. Moody in the way he could be seen as warranting severe punishment and someone who needs severe punishment. So we have OLR for saying this is not a Schaller case, they only wanted a year. We have the firm not referring this for criminal prosecution, resolving this with him, according to the testimony, remaining on, if not good terms, cordial terms with him when he sees his former partners. We have the referee looking at this and saying, in effect, if I didn't understand this court does have the bright line rule that Justice Kelly asked about, that is, this requires a six-month suspension. I think if you read the referee's report, you will see if he knew he could recommend something less than 6 months, I think he would have. But I think he thinks there is a bright line. And I don't think there is a bright line here because this court has always taken into account the individual characteristics. I've used up my time, so I'll thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. We are now going to break and come back after lunch. Case of the day. We are adjourned.